Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 805. It's the 19th of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have David Fraser, Chief Executive Officer of Great Western Mining, that's GWMO. And David talks about their recent resource update, which sent the share price through the roof. Plus, I also have George McDonough, CEO of Kryptonite One, a blockchain and cryptocurrency investment company traded on the NEX exchange. And David talks about some of their investments, including Ethereum and Satoshi Pay. Plus, as it's a Monday, Malky talks about the following stocks: Savannah Petroleum, Providence Resources, Far Limited, and Echo Energy. I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs released on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Fraser, Chief Executive Officer of Great Western Mining. That's GWMO ticket. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, of late, there's been a lot of interest in the stock. You've been one of the most followed companies on Vox Markets over the last few days. And so we'll get into the reason maybe why that's happening. But before we do that, David, for anyone listening that's not aware of what you do, could you give a sort of brief summary as to the business, please?
Yes, of course. We're an Irish-registered company, and our claims are in Nevada in the United States. We have basically 73 square kilometres, what they call unpatented claims. So we have 100% interest in silver. We have recently had an upgrade on our most advanced prospect, which is the M2 prospect. And last week we had an upgrade to a JORC indicated in inferred resource, where we have just under 17 million tonnes of just over 0.5% copper. So that's sort of virtually 90,000 tonnes of contained metal. And also at the same time, we also had an independent JORC compliant estimate of an exploration target, a further exploration target on that prospect, and that was between 87 and 116 million tonnes of 1.75% copper. So share price did quite well last week. We did raise a little bit of money to be able to bring forward the development of what they call, this zone is called the Shark Tooth Zone. And we will be looking to do some drilling on that as soon as we can. But this is only our first prospect. We have other prospects in the area as well. The second prospect is M4, is basically the next mountain along. And that prospect is now completely drill ready. We have a permit from the US Forestry Service. The other side of the valley, the two mountains on one side of the valley. On the other side, we have another prospect, the M1 prospect, where we have a cooperation agreement where we're exploring that with a local mining company. So I think we're quite well positioned now to be moving all three prospects forward quite quickly.
Yeah, okay. So let me get this straight in my head so I can see the picture. So correct me if I'm wrong, so you have three prospects and the most advanced is M2, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, and like I said, I'm looking at the chart here of your share price last week, and I can see it started at, I don't know what day it was, but about six trading days ago, started at 0.4 pence, and it's more than, almost quadrupled. It did at one point, went above that, it spiked at 2.4 pence. It's come back down to 1.5, so the share price has shot up. And I assume that was off the back of that news, was it, about the resource?
Off the back of our resource upgrade. I think, it's like all these things, you know, it's been a difficult sort of period, I think, for the resource sector until recently, and the resource upgrade was quite significant. And, you know, this is to a JORC standard, so it's an independent assessment of the resource we have. The upgrade is purely on the northern part of the mountain. The new independent assessment of the exploration target is in the centre of the mountain. And what we always say, well, look, at the south of the mountain, there is a historic copper-gold mine. So we think the mineralisation runs all the way through. So this is quite a large target with a lot of potential, and we certainly believe it has the potential to become, you know, a world-class copper play.
Yeah, well, just go through the figures again, if you could, David, on that resource upgrade, if you could.
Yes, sure. Well, we have 16,989,570 tons of 0.525% copper. Mm. So that is on. So this is all open pitable. So this is near surface copper oxide mineralization, and the mineralization goes from the surface and then it dips down. In towards the centre of the mountain, so therefore underground there is a potential in what we call the shark tooth zone. So the top of the mountain has a structure on it which looks like a shark's tooth, which is a cap rock. And what we actually think is the mineralisation was created by an epithermal plume which sort of came up the mountain, hit the cap rock and then spread out. It's like sort of something hitting the ceiling and spreading out along the area. Mm-hmm. And what the range of mineralisation is sort of 87, which we have as an independent assessment, it's sort of 87 to 116 million tonnes, and the anticipated grade is sort of 1 to 1.75 percent. And the type of structure is what we call an IOCG, iron oxide copper gold structure. So the expectation is that these are all copper oxides rather than sulfides, and the significance of that is that copper oxides is a very simple sort of process of getting the mineralized the minerals out of the ore. You know, it's called solvent extraction electrowinning. You basically crush it up, put it on a concrete pad, sprinkle acid over it, put it in a pond with a copper cathode, and you create. You know, with the electrolysis, you can create sort of 99.9% sort of pure copper cathode. So it's quite a cheap, simple sort of process to actually get the minerals out. So that's sort of one of the reasons why we're so excited at the size potential. You don't get many mineral bodies of this type and, you know, this size.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and so what's the next steps in here, David, now?
Well, I mean, this summer we have quite an extensive program of work planned already. So with regard to where we have the resource upgrade on the open pit, we need to go back. The actual strike length there is a sort of a gap in the centre of that, which we'd like to fill in. So we think that there's the opportunity to have further increases in the existing resource on the open pit by just doing a couple of drill holes in the centre of the strike. So under JORC, you can only count mineralisation within a certain distance of a drill hole. So we need to go back and sort of basically fill in the gap. And then the other thing is that we're going to do the prep work to do some drilling on the shark tooth. We did have a couple of discovery drill holes, and there were some hints of mineralisation at the bottom of that. But what we want to do is go there and prove up at least part of that shark tooth zone to a mineral resource. And we can do that, I think, when we did our original drilling in 2014, when we finished the drilling in 2014, we reclaimed the land. So you have to obviously go and make good all the disturbance that you did on the ground. And so we rolled over our part of our drill permit with the BLM, so we have enough disturbance allowance left that we can go back and do some more work on the shark tooth, but we need to reconfigure our existing permit. And then the other thing that we're also hoping to do this summer is extend the strike, or because it's completely open to the south. So we're looking at the zone that exists between M2 and M4, where we think that there's a lot of potential in that particular zone. And then finally, we also are planning a drill program on M4 for this autumn, and that will be our second target. And even though we think at the moment it's a separate ore body, there's consistent mineralization in terms of the geological structure between the two mountains, so it could well be that the two of these will eventually join together.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, and what's your long-term view here, David? What's the ambition here?
Well, I mean, I think we've always said the same thing. This is the potential to be a really world-class discovery. So inevitably, at some point in the future, we will be looking to sort of team up with a bigger company to do some sort of joint venture to develop the business. But our aim has always been to get as far as we can in this process, because the further along the chain we get in proving up the resources here, the more value is in our shareholders' profits, in our shareholders' pockets, rather than just leaving everything, for the big company to come along and sort of, hoover up all the profits at the end.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, if anyone's listening right now, David, and they're not following you on Vox Markets, but like the sound of your projects, could you give them three brief sort of bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, I think I've probably talked about the long-term prospects. I think short-term, we're going into a really exciting period. We're still waiting for a technical scoping study on M2, which is sort of due shortly. That will, the resource upgrade that we had was in advance of that. That was sort of price-sensitive information, which we thought we had to get out of there. So we're looking forward to reporting on that. We're currently on our M1, the other side of the mountain. We are still currently in a sort of a drill program, a discovery program there with our sort of cooperation partners, Crown Point. So again, there's sort of news due there as well. And we are going into this autumn, we will be bringing to life, our third prospect as well, the M4, where we have some drilling plans. So they would probably, short term, I can see that there's lots of interesting things for people to follow. And I think, in the medium term, over the next sort of year or 18 months, we're looking forward to this being a period where we're really starting to see how the value of this company is going to grow.
Marvellous. David. Yeah, absolutely. David, it's good to chat to you. And like you said, you have a bit of a news-rich period ahead, so hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for listening to me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George McDonough, CEO of Kryptonite One at KR1 ticker on the NEXT exchange. Is that right, George?
That's correct, yep.
Thanks for joining me, George. Now, you're coming on because we know, they've had an excellent run of late cryptocurrencies, and the market's building and everyone's saying it's getting closer to where there's mainstream adoption, and so that's why they could be huge. There's lots of these things. And I know I saw I don't know what it was, something ridiculous. People, what was it? $1,000 into Bitcoin, I think, in 2000, and I don't know, it wasn't that long ago. It's like 2010. Now you'd be worth like $46 million or something ridiculous. So you can see there's blue sky potential here, George, isn't there, amongst some of these currencies and tokens?
There is. That's correct.
So explain what you do at Kryptonite One, if you could, George.
Well, we were set up at the birth of something called the token economy. So Bitcoin was first, and that has a particular kind of blockchain, and then the blockchain was sort of iterated upon and new ones arrived. And we mainly work around something called Ethereum. Ethereum allows you to produce sort of tokens that represent some kind of functionality on various platforms that are built on top of Ethereum. Mm-hmm. And my company goes through those projects, decide which ones look interesting, and then we invest in the tokens. So we support the project. It's a little bit like Kickstarter, crowd sale. And they release the tokens to the market, and Kryptonite One buys them. And then manages the tokens when they're on the secondary market.
Okay, and so why Ethereum over sort of Bitcoin? What's the advantages here of Ethereum?
They do different things. Ethereum was built to allow what are called smart contracts. So they're little packets of code, essentially, that can be uploaded to the Ethereum blockchain. And then the Ethereum blockchain will automatically process that code in line with what the code states needs to happen. So it's a little bit like a global computer. But it has similar properties to the Bitcoin blockchain in the sense that it's sensorless, permissionless, decentralized. Effectively, the computers that make smart contracts work all over the world in various locations, and that's why it's so powerful.
Okay, and so even though it's had a big run of late, you think it could keep going? You think Ethereum?
Well, this is the big question, isn't it? On everyone's minds. I think my personal opinion is that decentralization as a force is potentially incredibly powerful. Our entire lives are mediated through central institutions, and when you have a network of people who all hold tokens in a particular project, and that project has immense value, they become incredibly energized, and so these we're seeing these projects get huge network effects, and that's growing the ecosystem, that's growing the amount of developers working in the ecosystem, and effectively some of these projects will disrupt the current incumbents. I'm not going to name any names, but there are some pretty big internet companies who need to be on the lookout, I feel, with some of these projects coming down the line.
Yeah, so I'm looking at your website, and you've got our investments here, and I recognise two of them. One is Ethereum, like you said there, and also Satoshi Pay. Now, I do hold some shares in Blue Star Capital, which is an investor in Satoshi Pay, and these do specialize in nano payments. So you think there's potential here? Because I just thought I liked it. I've spoken to the main guy there, Meinhard.
He's been on
the podcast a couple of times, and I like what he was saying. I don't really understand it and how it has potential or if it will. Do you think it has potential, this nano payment system? Why is that?
I think it does. I mean, Satoshi Pay is one of the private equity projects we took on. Mostly, like I say, we're in the token economy, but we liked what they were doing so much we couldn't say no. They're using the Bitcoin blockchain to allow micropayments on the internet. So you get certain companies that have paywalls, and you come across a paywall and it says, pay us £25 a month to read this content. Well, Satoshi Pay is designed so that you can just pay five pence to read an article, or less than that, a fraction of a penny to watch a video, and so you basically load up a wallet using your Visa card or PayPal. You put a little bit of currency into the system, and that changes it into Bitcoin. And then you just watch whatever you want to watch and do the things you want to do. And then gradually over time, little bits of Bitcoin come out of your wallet, and you've effectively watched no ads. And the content creators are very happy because they're getting paid. It's a new model, essentially, of online content.
So essentially, but they have to sort of, strike these deals, don't they, with all these people who are selling. So they have to go. I mean, now it depends how many deals they strike with the big sort of people who want to break this, their monthly subscription down into small payments, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that's the hard bit, isn't it? They have to go out and they have to convince people that their system is going to be, suitable for their consumers, and but I'm pretty sure that everyone has sort of come to the end of their tether in terms of endless advertising, and the stuff that comes with the advertising, all the cookies and packets and things that clog up your phone and your systems. And this is just a very simple, easy way of doing it differently. And I think you could say on a sort of wider level that you know, the blockchain's doing that kind of thing everywhere. It's this sense that, you know, it's providing people a new way, it's providing companies a new way of doing things that has never been possible before. And Satoshi Pay are going down this fight this particular fight, and I think it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, okay. And of the other investments, name another one that you think is quite exciting.
Well, we were very excited by a project called the Golem Project.
Yeah.
The Golem Project is essentially a way of uses the Ethereum blockchain to connect together redundant computer power around the world. So, you know, if you've got a gigantic office block full of computers that isn't used at night, you can plug it into the Golem network, and it can be used like I suppose the best way to describe it would be a gigantic decentralized Amazon server all the way around the world. And that's very powerful because it could create a new system whereby people get their computation done. They don't have to go to a centralized company, and you can just plug into the Golem network and upload what you need doing, and the Golem network will do it. It's seen quite extraordinary price appreciation. I think a lot of people believe in the project. The team's fantastic. So that's one of the ones that we were very pleased to get into.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Okay, George, excellent stuff, and it's good to chat to you. But as far as blockchain is concerned, which most of these, most of your investments are based upon, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, entirely. We're 95% token based.
Wow.
So nearly all Ethereum, but other things aside from Ethereum. But yeah, it's a thing called the ICO economy. So the initial coin offering world, where it's sort of the way that the blockchain is crowdfunded.
Yeah, I saw that recently in ICO, and I didn't know what it meant, and so I'm glad you've come up with that. So essentially, when you say tokens, you mean companies that offer these kind of tokens?
You could look at it in the way as a sort of, you know, cryptographic shares, but they're not really shares. They have that sort of look and feel to them, but they have some kind of functionality on these platforms. So I suppose a very basic example would be, you know, we're going to produce a decentralized photo sharing application, but in order to post photos to our application, you need to have some of these tokens to give you permission, kind of thing.
Or
sometimes you have to do, if you hold the tokens, you perform some kind of security job for the platform. So, you know, to make sure there's no fraudulent transactions going on, you can have a group of people with tokens who stake their tokens on the network, and they get rewarded in fees for performing a certain kind of job. So there's a huge array of possible use cases for these tokens, but generally speaking, you collect them and you wait for the platform to come to market, and then you use them. And the more people who get excited about the project, the more these tokens go up in value, because
they're
usually relatively scarce. The bottom of it all, the thing I should probably leave you with is the fact that this is a great way of creating a community. Not only do you get finance from doing these ICOs, you also at the same time, you know, give birth to an entire network of people who are interested in your project. And we're currently seeing that's incredibly powerful. Most of blockchain is based on network effects because everything's open source.
Yes.
You can't silo your code or your internal information in any way. So it's all about who's using the project, and this is a great way of getting projects off the ground.
Yeah, excellent stuff. All right, so, and if anyone wants to invest in you, because you can take the sort of the hard work out of them having to sort of look around all these cryptocurrencies and these token systems. So they go to the Nexus Exchange, obviously set up an account there, and your ticker there is KR1, is that right?
KR1, that's correct, yeah.
Marvellous, George, good to speak to you, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thanks very much.
No problem, thank you. Cheers, then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Justin. And yourself?
I'm all right. I'm sitting here in T-shirt and jeans. Shorts, I mean, not jeans, shorts. That's how hot it is at the moment. It's amazing, isn't it? Already in the morning, it's this hot.
I know, me, I'm in the same attire, mate.
Lovely. All right, well, let's not put people off too much, because both of us are dressed scantily clad sort of thing. But, all right, so, very interesting thing. I know you went to the Capital Markets Day for Savannah Petroleum, and a while back, about a couple of hours after that, released an RNS about a possible transaction they're going into. I understand, you know, you probably don't know anything about it. If you do, you can't talk about it. But that was, I didn't see that coming, did you?
Certainly not. I mean, I was expecting something. I mean, as I went through the Capital Markets Day, which gave a detailed analysis of what was coming up in the way of drilling and everything else, and I remained very positive. I was just about to pop it into the old bucket list when this announcement came out. And to be honest, I don't know what the deal is, so I can't really comment on it. I've guessed at these things before, not always successfully. But the ending that I was expecting was some sort of farm in, mm-hmm. or put it this way, farm out, someone else farming into their deal. So it may well be something to do with that. And I was convinced that something like that would be happening imminently. But this looks like way a bit more than that, because it looks like it's another big bite. All I would say is that the shareholders of Savannah have been around for a very long time. They and the management have got, obviously, a lot of skin in the game. And if they're prepared to back something like this, I guess it's probably a pretty sensible deal. Yeah. You can't say anything until you actually see it. But it's a really important time to Savannah, and although I can't put a suspended share into the bucket list, which is slightly irritating, I almost certainly will be putting it in as soon as we hear what it is.
Yeah, very interesting. And a lot of people thought, what? Oh, that's interesting, because I mean, I do hold some shares in Savannah, and I was quite interested by that. Wow, that is.
Yeah, I got a lot of inbound emails on that, and you know, I can't always reply to everyone's email, and especially when I don't know what's happening. But it clearly shows that this stock is a very interesting stock in the marketplace at the moment, and for very good reasons.
Okay, cool. All right. So what else are you looking at, Malky?
Well, having not spoken for a couple of weeks, and yesterday, last week being fairly quiet, I wanted to touch base on Providence, because that was an absolute ripper of a deal they did about a week ago. I wanted to talk about Far and Senegal and Cairn and so on, and I wanted to talk about Echo Energy, where there's a lot going on.
Yes, let's start with Providence. That was a good deal, wasn't it, I thought?
This was a ripper of a deal, and Tony O'Reilly continues to come up with cracking deals like this. And in this case, getting Total into the Atlantic margin, and particularly as a potential, not certain, but a potential farm in E to Druid and Drombeg, is incredibly good news for not only for Providence, where it brings them 27 million payments if they go ahead for... you know, and they've also, you know, they've got the potential to farm into the Avalon block with them, with Total and Cairn potentially coming in, which gives them cash in. It gives them, you know, a well, which, you know, would be the cost of a cap of $42 million. But it also, they're getting a key super major investor like Total into offshore Ireland. Is a massive sort of potentially de-risking play for not only Providence but for Europa and indeed a number of the others. And although this is a slow burner, and I've always said that with regards to particularly to Europa, where still a way off before drilling or anything else, with Providence, they've obviously got this big well coming up in the summer. So they got cashed up with that placing, and more people are coming in. It looks like one or two of the super majors rather like this postcode, mm-hmm. and having been rather left alone for some time, I've got a feeling that people are going to sort of take a look at it. I don't know what the Druid well's going to be like, but this has got to be great news for investors offshore Ireland.
Yeah, well, Tony came on the podcast and he explained. He said, basically, we've still got cash in the bank now. We sort of made a profit on this well already, and it's not being drilled. So he said, we've still got cash to do other things. So he said, I just thought it was a fantastic deal. I mean, so I likened it to having a startup business. We got two investors come on board. They basically buy the business off you, but you still hold 28% of the business, and you still earn a profit from the sale. It's like an excellent deal, isn't it? Really?
No, it's a very good deal.
Okay, what's next, Malky?
Well, I wanted to talk about Farr and Cairn to a certain extent because Farr had made a spirited response to Woodside's claims regarding the Senegal acreage, and that Farr had said that, you know, that they are a leading supporter, I think they call themselves, of Senegal. And they're in bigger support than that because they've got CNOOC as their major lead backer. Woodside had gone off on a sort of tangent saying that there would be a joint venture partners agreement that they would take over the operatorship. I'm not aware that there's any agreement in the JV agreement that should happen. I think that it was perceived that it would go over to Conoco when it went from exploration to development phase, but there's nothing there, and there's not even any notification from the Senegal government yet that the deal from Conoco to Woodside has actually been done. And Farr have got a significantly more interest in this now that they've got CNOOC backing them. This area in West Africa, offshore West Africa, is getting hotter and hotter. Bigger companies are coming in. And it's important to note that Cairn are in a very strong position as well here, because Cairn have announced this morning on the sort of odd situation on the Indian dividend front, where they're still having major league battles with the Indian tax authorities. I would sort of tell people to rather not worry about that anymore. With the big development that Cairn have got coming through, and the Senegal thing here looking, you know, getting better, and the same and the area getting better all the time. The Indian dividend is almost immaterial nowadays to the right size of the rest of the business. It'll be important to win the dispute with the Indian tax office, and I'm pretty sure they will. But no, I think that in that neck of the woods, Senegal is going very strongly. It's a very hot area. Farr are the way to play it for a huge amount of upside. Obviously, it's created in Australia, but they've got a very strong position here, and I wouldn't rule anything out on this company.
How big is Farr? Do you know how big they are size-wise, market cap? I'm trying to
think. Yeah, I mean, it's in terms of what they've got. In the book, I mean, they did a recent raise, which was like 80 million Aussie dollars.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that if you look at the size of the business, it's, you know, they have had to dilute once or twice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a strong position to be in. I think that, you know, when you look at the comparisons of dollars per barrel for Farr compared to, say, Cairn or anyone else for that matter, you know, it's pretty insignificant. I mean, this is a company which is, what, £300 million? Pounds market cap.
I'm just looking on the website there. It's got $404 million. So yeah, just over three.
Right, that's right. So there we are, $400 million. Potentially this might be 2 billion barrels of oil.
Yeah,
well, 15% of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's it just hasn't been spotted by the market yet. Retail investors are beginning to pick it up quite smartly. They've got a major league blue chip investor in this from the last raise, so looking very strong.
Yeah, cool. All right, marvellous, Malky. Was there anything else, or is that it for today?
Well, yeah, I was going to talk about Echo Energy.
Oh, yeah, Echo, yes, cool. Can't leave that out. There. Yeah.
And there's a lot of retail involvement in Echo.
Yeah.
And in the last 10 days, I mean, I've got a feeling that Echo is about to really sort of take off. I've got things in the book saying that they've finished the raise, so they've got their 26 million euros ready to play with, which is an enormous amount of money for a startup, effectively.
Yeah.
They've completed the sale of the Egypt thing, which isn't a huge amount, but it's a million or so, but it cleans the balance sheet up again a bit further. And they've appointed one of the best people in the whole of the industry in Fiona Macula as their new CEO. She joins from Rockhopper on an amicable basis because the huge Rockhopper adventure which she was involved in, which is Sea Lion, which is going more into development now. But this is a massive pick up for Echo, for the people who were saying, you know, is it just going to be another sound or whatever. So it's not. Fiona will be running the business. They've already appointed a new VP for exploration, who's extremely experienced in South America, and I'm therefore expecting to see something from them any minute now about their first deal. So they got cashed up, they got management ready, they're all ready to rumble. I would expect to see a deal from them this week, without a doubt. We're looking at sort of Bolivia or Brazil, somewhere like that, I think, to start off with. There's a lot going on in NG. You're going to have to keep your eyes on this one, Justin.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of heat around this company as well at the moment. And it's almost like saying, you know, if you've done your research but missed the entry, it's almost like, you know, look for dips, because the consensus is it will be going higher, you know. And I remember when Independent Resources, actually, we were chatting to you at the time. It was going up crazy. It was like 300% up or something. I said, like, I wouldn't buy here. It carried on and got 2,000-3,000% up after that. But there we are.
There is a lot to be done here. So I would think this is one of those ones that, yeah, okay, if you're cleverer than me on terms of buying on dips and stuff, but I think this is most interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And, we'll be. We're going to see over the next few months more, you know, a number of new deals. So
yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Malky, have a nice day, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it, Justin. Take care now, mate.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Ami Minerals, AMC. At 4, 7 Digital, that's 7 Dig. At 3, it's Ascent Resources, always there nearly pretty much every day, AST. At 2, second most followed, Oilex, OAX. And the number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, one of the most followed companies, is 88 Energy. That's 88 ticker. All right, here's top five most liked RSs. At 5, Ortac Resources, OTC, update on inferred mineral resources in the DRC. At 4, Innovaderma, IDP, trading statement. At 3, Oilex, partial receipt of outstanding cash calls. At 2, Extract Resources, Manica Alluvial Mining Contractor Agreement. And at number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was 88 Energy. That's 88, of course. Icewine number 2 operations update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.